Welcome once again to the next in our series of the Leadership Hikers. I'm Joanna Bircher and I'm a GP from Greater Manchester. And together with my friend and colleague, Dr. Amar Righani, who's a retired GP from Sheffield, we're talking to people who are mainly from primary care, people who've inspired us with their stories about the things they care about and how they've helped to make life better for their communities and for the professionals that they work with. We've written about what it takes to lead well in our book, The Leadership Hike. And so this series is about the people who do this, people who we call our leadership hikers. It's about what they've learned and what we might do from their experiences. So this week, I'm delighted to welcome the next of our hikers, who is Dr. Tracy Vell. And Tracy is the Medical Director for Health Innovation Manchester and also the Medical Executive Lead for Primary Care for NHS Greater Manchester. And that's amongst other leadership roles. She also has a leadership role on the Manchester LMC and in our Greater Manchester Primary Care Board. So she's lots of experience in this field. So thank you very much for joining me, Tracy, today.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here. And hello, everybody. Like any true GP, you never do one single job, right?
Yeah, that's pretty right. Yeah. So just starting off, really, just to tell us a bit about how you came to take up a leadership role at all in primary care.
Ooh, that's a good question. Do you ever think you're taking a leadership role? I'm not sure you do. Well, I didn't. I probably thought my journey into it was more like I can see a problem. And who's going to do something about it? Oh, nobody, I might. I think that's my journey in, is seeing really my colleagues all talking about the same problem and thinking, somebody's got to do something. I think I might just try. So I was very young in my practice career, or even in my hospital career, where I just thought, oh, I'll do it. I'm fine. I'm young. I've got energy. And I'm quite creative. So I don't think I thought I'd better learn about being a leader. I think I just did and then learned on the job.
I think we did talk to lots of people, Amar and I, who have a very similar experience to that it's about they see something that they just think needs fixing or could be better. And it's a drive to just feel like you can do something about that, isn't it, that takes you to this kind of place. So what kind of situations have you found yourself in where you feel you've learned your best lessons about leadership?
Always the things that are the most difficult to do, probably. You always learn the most from the things that are not working so well. So all the really big complex things that you've got to do, because you're not going to get them all right. So there's loads of learning. So I think with anything that you land at scale in general practice or in primary care, is always going to be complex because everybody's different. We're all different people, aren't we? We all like to practice in a different way, and we all are energized by different things. And that's what makes the sector such a great sector to work with, but also makes it complex and difficult to lead. So I learned a lot in being able to feel the audience, try and gather as much opinion as you can, and be adaptable and changeable, and actually not coming in with a set view of a process or a thing, but being able to sort of change, manage on the spot, you know, live. So their learnings are where it's been more difficult, more complex, and a lot on the line. You learn a lot very quickly. And then moments of reflection probably come after, where you confirm what you might have done on a leadership angle by reading a book, and you think, oh, actually, that must have been where I was going in that journey, more confirming that rather than being a theoretical learning. So I'm obviously a doer. I like to learn as I do.
And you've touched upon something I think is really interesting there that I'd love to hear a bit more about. So when people first step into the space of leading something new or wanting to solve a problem, it's sometimes, well, initially, you hope for their sake, it's on a reasonably small scale to get started on. So maybe a practice level, a PCN or cluster level, where you can take a problem-solving approach, you can look at the current process, you can do some tweaks, some fine-tuning. You kind of have an awareness, if we do this differently, this is likely to result. So it can be quite a straightforward, sometimes complicated, but if you get the right ducks in a row and the right things aligned and the right people on board, you can probably make that thing happen. But you now operate in this world that's quite different from that, where there are lots of different players, lots of big players. So, for example, the 67 PCNs across Greater Manchester, and there are the trusts, there's the public health, there's all those kind of factors. And so to make something happen is no longer something that's completely within your control. You work in, therefore, aren't you, what we would call a complex adaptive system, health and social care. Do you need different skills for that kind of world? What do you feel are the things that, if somebody wants to, has already been operating in some leadership capacity, say a practice or a PCN level, and they're wanting to take it perhaps to their ICB level or locality even first, what are the things that are different, do you think?
So I think the skills are probably the same. So you cut your teeth in a practice, as you say, which are mainly skills about listening. You know, leadership is about listening and serving. It's not about a positional power. So I think you take those forward in whatever forum you are. So first you listen and you reflect, and then you adapt and change, and then you learn the skills of how to deliver change. And those, you quite rightly said, you started that work in the practice, and at scale, they're not particularly different. There's perhaps a few things that might change it. So where you're working, it's dependent on whether you hold all the keys. So across a complex system, a system working, do you have to influence or do you hold all the keys? Is your position one of owning a budget or owning a team or owning the decision, or do you have to negotiate? So they're really where the challenges grow in system working. And if you don't own the decision, you work more in the influencing sphere, and that takes a bit of bravery, honesty, integrity, not moving, changing your core position, or actually the core position that you're bringing from other people that you've talked to, and learning when to influence, when to speak, when to understand the politics, when to be quiet, when to actually present in a style that's either verbal, when to present in a paper style, who you're presenting to. So all those are skills that expand beyond a practice where you know the individual so well. The key is listening, getting to know the individuals around a system as well, and knowing how the system clicks or ticks, and the authority that you have within it, which you can really personally develop authority. And it's based on those things, you know, your integrity, your capabilities to present in a style that's recognized and palatable for that day in that moment. So all those are learned skills, but there's no substitute for getting out there and being passionate and doing. You know, there's no mistake too big to make. Grab yourself someone, a mentor. Doesn't have to be a sort of mentor relationship that's really set. It could be just someone you aspire to. Have a look at them, watch them, learn, sit in a meeting, even sit in it and don't talk. I did a whole load of that when I was moving into the devolution system, of listening, watching, and looking at boardroom play. It's really important.
I mean, you've survived really successfully at this kind of system level for a long time. And I think, obviously, from what I know about you, having the privilege to work alongside that, you have a kind of a political kind of sixth sense sometimes. Do you just get that through sitting, listening to others? Or is there something that people maybe listening to this podcast who want to move into that sphere or be more successful in that sphere, is there something that they can do differently to kind of get that?
Well, I think practice, you know, it's not something that you've just born with. And it depends on really understanding that that's what you want to learn. I think we all, as GPs, practicing GPs, are a little bit further along that line than perhaps others, because we're used to watching the patient in front of us, aren't we? And watching their body language, which is just as important sometimes as what they're saying in terms of diagnosing. It's pretty much the same in boardrooms, and you just develop a heightened sense of where the hierarchy sits, what's the power seat, how it makes me smile sometimes when I watch it, because it doesn't mean I'd do it, but it's important to know that it exists. And you just use that emotional intelligence that I think has drawn you into practice anyway, and hone your skills and actually test it out. Sometimes I've gone and said, oh, did you see or did you hear what such a body was saying or what they were saying? And did they mean this? You know, there's a lot of testing theories, which we also do in practice.
Okay.
It's not just a set gift.
So, yeah, it sounds like kind of just being curious and checking something out is quite a, I mean, we've mentioned it in other podcasts we've done about this kind of role of the curious leader who doesn't make assumptions and checks things out. And it sounds like there's some of that in what you're saying in terms of the learning.
Yeah, I mean, to be curious and brave, I think.
Yeah.
Lots of people in positions think, one, I dare not say anything in case my passion isn't shared by the group. But I think you should be brave enough to, if it's something you're passionate about or you're carrying colleagues' passion, you have to declare it. I'm not being too worried about looking an idiot. Everybody looks an idiot at some points in their career. And as long as you are prepared to recognise that you looked an idiot and do something about it and learn from it, then there's no matter. You know, we're all real life people. Nobody has it all sewn up. Not even those on the highest pinnacle. We're all human beings and we all have the capacity to keep on learning. So bravery and curiosity are important.
Yeah, I think bringing up bravery is a great one, because it's really interesting for me to think about what are the risks, what do we need to be brave about and what are the risks. And you mentioned one of them about, you know, what's the worst thing can happen? I can look a bit stupid. Have you had any kind of experiences where the risks have been higher than that, or it's been more of a concern?
Well, obviously, you don't want to continually look like an idiot. So the risk in that is that you lose your place and you lose the trust of the people around you. So therefore, you can't then ever take an important topic to be discussed and be received with a parity position. So you don't want to be an idiot all the time, but obviously you need to be brave enough to either stand by your principles and improve. So being an idiot, I don't class standing by your principles being an idiot. I class standing by your principles at the wrong time, in the wrong language, in the wrong way, might be idiotic. And all those things you can learn from.
Yes, and maybe that, what I was mentioning before about that kind of political savviness, not recognising the needs of others in the room and how you can, once you fully understand those, how you can, you know, achieve an outcome that's perhaps acceptable to both parties, isn't it? Sometimes there's a lack of understanding about what the people's needs are too in those spaces.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, communication is two-way, isn't it? So, that's where the listening and know your audience bit is really important. Yeah. And serving your audience. And I've met so many actually people on the leadership journey, and there's probably a number of types, but there are those that are more worried about their leadership position than they are about leading. So that's one challenge. And there's others that don't give due respect to those in the leadership positions. They'd rather knock them than support them. And so I think there's always a balance of, you know, respect to those in leadership positions, because with all due respect, you don't know what they're going through and what challenges they've got in that leadership position. And there's always something to learn. But also not just saying you stand there by right of your position. None of us have the right to lead. We're given the opportunity and we have to work with that.
Oh, I'd love to go into that a bit more, especially what you said just at the start, that you can sometimes spot people who seem to be that it's the leadership position that they're after, rather than the actual the problem solving or the service that they want to improve or that they want to lead. If you spot that, and you that's also somebody that you need to work with closely, have you got any tips? I'm sure there's plenty of people listening who recognize that scenario and wonder if you've got any words of wisdom about managing that.
There are quite a number of people who lead by position and are happy just to push papers and what I call tread water without actually pushing the envelope in doing and leading. And if you're working with them, I suppose it's Sometimes it's just listening, getting to know who the person is, and then just giving gentle challenges about open questions like, well, what do you think, or what could we do? Because they're usually the least creative. So their passion lies less in creation. And it's just understanding, you know, what part of your leadership gives you the most satisfaction. I love people, so I'm always questioning them. And if I find them challenging, first I want to know what one within me, why do I find them challenging? And if it's that issue that I feel like they're treading water, I need to know more about where their passion is. And am I missing something? So it's more learning. And then you can really, if you're working closely with people, start to say, well, I can see your strengths are A, B, and C. Yeah. And my strengths are D, E, and F.
Yeah.
Perhaps if we worked in partnership and together, we'd be a complete person. You know, there's lots of ways to call
out. Lovely. So that's the kind of, you recognise that your assumption is that they're paper pushing and treading water, but actually then you think, I've noticed that I think this about them. What I'll do is I'll check if that's true and trying to find out what does, if there are other things that drive them. We talk a lot about when we're leading our teams is finding out what drives people, because it'll different things motivate different and people that we lead. And I guess that's similarly with when you're working alongside other leaders who are from different systems and different partners in your system. So my next question is going to be about challenges, and you've probably answered some of these already, but it's about what's been your greatest challenge, or what is your greatest challenge in your role, and what approaches do you take to tackle those? So,
challenges, that's a big question. I mean, there's probably been so many. I suppose the challenge is always to make sure that whatever position you've matured into, whatever is your opportunity, that you remain adaptive, I think.
Okay.
I see a lot of people who then crystallize into a position and stop learning and stop developing. So the challenge is always to remain adaptive, responsive, flexible. And that is a challenge, actually, because the older we get, we probably want to become more rigid and more in control and more like it's a routine pattern. So you definitely have to challenge yourself to say, am I still doing this? Am I still the listening, adaptive, quick thinking, supportive, empathic leader that I want to be? But the challenges that it bring, you know, in systems are really, well, the challenge I've always had in my leadership, I've not had a guaranteed, you know, commissioning role or a clinical role or something that's secure. And I think it's good, because you really learn more the harder the situation. We started saying that. So it's really harder just to be representing. And I walked into one of my roles with no contract whatsoever. So, you know, that was a personal risk. And that's a different leadership journey. I think you learn quicker. You're really passionate to do that sort of role. So I think the challenge is really to keep learning, keep taking roles that make you passionate about what you're doing, keep looking for problems that need solving, and move sideways, downwards, upwards. It's more about diversity of the opportunity, rather than just finding yourself in a role that's set for the next number of years where you're not learning.
Well, a lot of what we talked about so far is about how is getting things done and dealing with kind of system partners and operating well. So, and leaders also kind of have to get the most out of the teams and the people that they lead, don't they? And have you had any kind of particularly challenges from where that's been difficult, or things that tips you want to pass on?
Getting the most out of your team is realizing that you are a team.
Okay.
So it's not just about you. And so it's not all on you to get the best out of your team. It's on you to realize that the environment has to be created by the leader to get the best out of their team. But the team is the team. Let them buddy together. Let them find out about each other. Let their capabilities surface, and you have to be just ready to be open to see them. That's a leadership environment, and then encouragement. The team is the team, and if they have the right environment, they'll tick, move, motivate each other, and your job is easy. So I think it's all about that makes a team function. You can do that in all sorts of ways. You know, I've been through them all, from, you know, sitting cross-legged, going through questionnaires, or team building together, or doing activities together. And I think that all of those move to the same thing, that we should be doing that all the time, really testing out what's your strength, what do you like doing, what don't you like doing. And sometimes we have to be pushed on what we don't like doing, but sometimes we just say, actually, if you don't like doing and it's not your strength, we'll use your strength. So it's, well, the leadership is more about learning about people and creating the right environment, and the rest should really work, because you create that environment, the next leader is in the room and taking that up, you know, and you see them emerge, and there's nothing better than seeing leadership emerge.
Well, I think that's a lovely thing to say. So now this is my kind of final question, which is, for anyone who's working in primary care who might be just thinking about stepping into a leadership role, or they can see a problem that they think needs fixing and they hadn't realised this is leadership, but they want to step into it, what would you say to them?
They probably don't realise they're stepping into leadership at that stage. You just have a passion to do something and help people. So I think there are outlets that are out there, particularly, you know, at practice level. So you might want to cut your teeth within your practice, as you mentioned, I think, Joanna, earlier, and start trying to lead something small scale there. Being given the opportunity to do it. There are other environments. So you've said, you know, there are LMCs that support their members day in, day out, that gives you an environment to both lobby but support. So I think it's a great place to cut your teeth. There's also so many leadership avenues within the primary care network environment now that might take you into those spaces. There's academic organisations. So my key is, work out which sort of problem you like to solve first. Are you a political animal and you like to solve the big national problems? Are you an interpersonal problem that really gets it down with people and really wants to make everybody's working life a lot better? And just once you've worked out how you like to operate, then there'll be an avenue to take that on. And if you can't find that avenue, find someone who's doing something in leadership and just ask them where that environment sits and how do they get into it. And I'm sure you in your role, mine in my role, have, you know, paved the way of many leaders by just steering them in the right direction for someone that you know will be a sympathetic encourager of their leadership progress.
Thank you so much for agreeing to talk to me today.
You're welcome. It's been great. It's very often you don't get a chance to reflect like this. So everything's a learning experience. I'm really grateful. Thanks, Joanna. Great.
So it was really, really lovely to have a conversation with Tracy, because obviously I've watched her in her leadership role for quite a number of years now in Greater Manchester, as it's also where I work. And she had some lovely things to say today, highlighting that importance of kind of leaders being curious and listening, and actually the adaptability, being prepared to actually change your mind or change your view or change your behavior based on what you've heard when you've listened. And it was fascinating. I was thinking of how she operates on the system level and how that's different from kind of straightforward practice level leadership, how important it is to be aware of other people's needs and the kind of the politics and what goes on in boardrooms and things, and how when to decide when you stop and listen, when to decide to be more curious, or when you decide you just need to take an influencing approach because you don't have the keys to solve that particular issue, but you can maybe influence the direction. I think these are really useful and important skills. And she also talked about environment that leadership set up, which I guess is what we would term culture. Leaders often, don't they, set cultures of organisations, how people talk to each other, whether there's an opportunity to do the sitting on the floor with your legs crossed, or those kind of team building. Who sets that culture? And then the thing I really loved at the end was, if you're dipping your toe in the water yourself and you think you might be wanting to be interested in making a more of a difference and doing some leadership is think about what problems you like fixing, because once you know what problem it is that you want to fix, you'll be able to know which direction you want to take your leadership. So some just great things there. So hopefully you've enjoyed today's podcast, and we look forward to welcoming you again to the next one.